Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 625 for comics originally released on July 31st, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is Red Hood Outlaw Annual number 3, or Red Hood and the Outlaws Annual number 3, which would make more sense because they haven't done two Red Hood Outlaw Annuals. Whatever.
Hey, we'll go with that.
The naming shenanigans on this are actually not too bad. It's just a little crazy.
Yeah.
I dropped off this title, I think, around issue 31.
Okay, and I had never read it, so this was my first time reading this book at all.
Oh, wow, I hadn't realized that. Okay.
Yeah, but I think this is a good one for a new reader, just because I don't feel like it tied into a main story. It may have, but I don't know.
Well, it kind of tied into two storylines.
Okay, that were ongoing in the regular book?
Well, that's the thing. One of them was ongoing in the regular book before I dropped it half a dozen issues back.
Oh, okay.
When they switched from Red Hood and the Outlaws to Red Hood Outlaw. And I read, the first arc of that and then dropped off or whatever. But at some point, Bizarro and Artemis kind of went away.
Okay, gotcha. Now, are Bizarro and Artemis, are they the Outlaws, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Okay, you just wanted to know. They didn't come out and say that.
For this round of Red Hood and the Outlaws, because originally it was Arsenal and Starfire along with Red Hood.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
So they've rotated that a bit. So it was tying into that, and that was long enough ago that I'm like, when and how did they leave? What's going on with that? But then also, when we get into this issue, the first thing we see is Jason talking to some kid... wasn't Caden.
Yes.
And I think that ties into the, I want to say, current storyline in Red Hood Outlaw, but I don't think that one's actually started yet, because I sure thought I started picking it up or pre-ordering it when it's got, he's got these powered kids he's going to teach.
Yeah, that kid, the art in here was pretty decent, but the kid, he just looked kind of weird to me in this book, you know?
Yeah.
His head's a little too big, his feet are really big, and then he does that weird shaking his head thing when he uses his powers.
Yeah, I couldn't tell what was going on with that, and it felt like we should have already known who this kid was, and we haven't seen the kid yet. At least I haven't.
Yeah, so I'm assuming he was there, but I didn't know how much this story tied in. It was weird, because it almost took place all in here, but I could tell there's a lot of stuff I don't know what's going on or who these characters really are.
Well, it seems to, like I said, to be tying into a story from better part of, you know, at least half a year ago or more, and to a storyline that may not have kicked off yet.
Okay.
So it was a little confusing in that regard, but it at least, I think, was decently accessible.
Yeah. I think it was decent because I understood what was going on, and having never read the book, that's a thumbs up for it.
So, yeah. When we flash back to 6 months earlier and we go to Another Earth.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that's suitably vague. I have no idea what Earth this story takes place on. Doesn't totally matter, I guess.
Why are we going there? But okay, cool.
Well, they had gotten rid of these two through some sort of dimensional doorway, and we're just now, again, far too late, I think, finding out what happened to them.
And here we are, 6 months later.
Yeah, we have enough time of them or first arriving there for them to realize they're in over their head. And then magically roll forward 6 months. It's like, okay.
That's the one thing I didn't like. I didn't like the big time jumps because it felt like this was a larger story, but that made it feel hurried a little bit.
Yeah, it did. And I was having a hard time getting a grip on this other Earth.
Okay, cool. What were you having a hard time getting a grip on?
Well, it seemed pretty clear that all the heroes lost their powers and everybody without outpowers gained powers.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense. Why these people suddenly started donning identities like Dairy King, I don't know.
Those were the worst identities. I was like, oh, these are bad.
And I also couldn't tell what happened to everybody, because this seems to be a fairly thinly populated world.
Yeah, where are all the people? Because you have a very small cast, and it looks pretty barren. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. That is kind of weird.
I mean, there was clearly something that happened here, and it's like, you know, if this had actually been a miniseries they'd done, and then we found out it tied into this title or whatever, okay, that might have been cool.
Yeah, this seems like almost like an encapsulation of maybe what has happened in Red Hood and the Outlaw, and I know that's not what happened here, but there's so much stuff that happened here, from this people gaining powers, fighting against the superheroes, and everything that happens on this Earth, but it's kind of just compacted into this short story, so it felt weird to me, just the pacing.
I would agree with that, and then, like, what are these people's powers? I mean, what does Derry King do, and what on Earth does air quotes do?
Yeah, Derry King. And then I'm looking at their names right now, Butcher Block and Flutterby. I'm like, oh, these are just horrible, horrible names.
Flutterby at least looked kind of like a butterfly, so it's like I kind of get that one.
Yeah. Butcher Block, I guess he walks around looking like he's a butcher, but I'm just like, they don't really look like real superpowers, and I'm like, what are they doing? It's weird.
It was almost a parody of the stuff. And then there was the one spot where I forget who it was Bizarro was fighting. It's that first guy they encounter.
Okay, yeah.
And he literally punches the guy into the sun.
Yeah, the police officer. Yeah, his jaw's all distorted. That was pretty amazing.
It's like he's being distorted by the air pressure in airless space.
Exactly. The cubs are flying back. I was like, yeah, that's true. In airless space. Yeah, that shouldn't be happening.
I would have actually done this page a little bit differently. I might have actually made it either two pages or at least multiple panels to where you get the sense that it actually took him the 8 minutes to get to the sun.
That would have made it a little bit funnier.
You know, as it was, the art was okay. The story wasn't bad. It wasn't brilliant.
Yeah, that's where I was. It wasn't bad. It actually felt like an interesting story. It felt like an arc, at least. Like, this should have been 6 issues. And if this was a 6-issue arc, it probably would have read pretty good to me, because I want to know more about the world, what happened. I want to know more about, you know, what happened to the superheroes. But, you know, here we are. We're going to dip in our toe and we're out. And so I don't know if we'll ever see this again.
It's funny, because I was thinking the story was fine, but I was kind of glad it was an annual and not a full-size arc.
Oh, okay. So you don't want to know what happened to the heroes.
I kind of do. Well, I do and I don't.
Okay. I want to know what in the heck happened. So that's why I was saying an arc. I need to know what happened here, but I don't think I'll ever know.
I think if it was a satisfying arc, I'd be okay with it. But so much of this seemed to be just, you know, wow, look what crazy thing we did with this character kind of, you know, stuff. And I don't know that they had the material for an arc here.
That's true. Yeah. And for an annual, this was pretty decent, because a lot of annuals, you get these one-offs that just really aren't very good. This was not a great one. It was not, you know, there's a lot of holes in it and there's a lot of flaws, but it was entertaining, I gotta say.
Yeah, I'll give it that. It certainly was an enjoyable read. It had its weaknesses. It had a couple of moments that were fun, though. It's one that, if you're curious what happened to these characters, you kind of get the answer here, but you kind of also don't, although I guess they may be getting back into the title soon.
And you got to buy this book just to see Lex Luthor, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I would just laugh, because I got there, I was like, huh, interesting.
I'm curious if they were to go flesh this out to an arc and give us some of the backstory, both before what we see here and maybe a little after this, if it would be a good read or not. Some of the ideas were interesting. Some are okay. I get it.
And some are ridiculous. That's what's weird. I don't know if it's supposed to be funny or serious, or it felt a little bit of both.
Yeah. Well, and a few, like, again, air quotes, were just not defined.
Yes. So it was so hard to grade this book, because I was reading it and I was like, I find it entertaining, yet I find it ridiculous. I find it rushed, yet I don't know if I really want more. Maybe I do. I want to know some of the backstory. It gave me such a mixed feeling, everything in here.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because it's one of those, I don't know that I want more, but I don't know that I don't want more. I'd be open to more, but with a wait-and-see approach.
Yeah, exactly. So, and one thing I will say, even though having never read this, you know, I've seen Red Hood before, and I've seen Bizarro before, and I've seen characters in here before, so I wasn't completely lost. And it was decent enough to where, you know, if I didn't have so much to read, I would consider picking up the book, because I think Red Hood and the Outlaws, or the Outlaw now, no S.
It's Red Hood Outlaw, because he's
just Red Hood Outlaw.
The solo Outlaw. But with these two possibly coming back, maybe it'll go back to plural, or maybe the kids he's teaching, I don't know.
It's true, and because Red Hood really wasn't a part of this story, which was weird.
He was not. This was continuing the arc from back when it was a team of three book.
Yeah, that was one of the, I didn't know if I wanted to call it a complaint, that he was there on the first like three pages and then gone, three or four pages, and then you never see the character again. Then it's all about the Outlaws and this other dimension.
Well, according to the solicit, this is picking up on events of issue 25.
Okay.
So that was a little while ago.
Yeah, so it's going back there. And yeah, well, so that being said, I hope the Outlaws join the book because I did like this. I don't know if I like Red Hood because, I mean, I know I like the character, but because he wasn't really in here.
Well, and like I said, I had dropped off the book when it got to the end of an arc and it felt like, oh, they're changing directions. It's like, you know what? I was cutting back at that point, so I cut the title. It's not that I was hating the title or anything, but it just, they gave me a jumping off point and I took it.
Yeah. So now, did they do enough? Do you want to read this again, or are you happy with your decision?
I had picked up the annual because I was curious what happened to these two, and I've pre-ordered the arc where he's teaching a bunch of new characters.
Oh, okay, cool. So you're back on board then,
At least for the arc.
All right, gotcha. Oh, well, that's a good thing.
So this is one of those that was, I dropped it, but not a, oh my god, I'm so glad I dropped it kind of a thing. It was just, it was easy to cut, so I did.
Yeah, I'm having some cuts this month myself, so some books I'm just not enjoying. But yeah, this one actually interested me a little bit. And if I see these two characters in there, let me know if they show up. I may end up picking it up.
Okay. It looks like Red Hood Outlaw number 37 is where the next sort of arc starts or whatever, so that should be out any time now. For me, the art was okay, but just okay. It wasn't brilliant. It wasn't horrible. Yeah. Some of these characters, is there any point getting invested? Are we ever going to see them again? Again, it had its ups and its downs, but overall, it was a good enough read, and I felt they covered enough ground in this single issue to tell a kind of a beginning, middle, and end of a story. I went with a B- on this.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool. We were not that far apart. I read this. I didn't know exactly what was going on and who everyone was at the beginning, you know, like some, like the kid. I didn't know why we had a prologue in there, but I'm sure that ties into the book. I enjoyed it. Some of the parts of it seemed a little bit off to me. It seemed a little weird. The pacing was quick. I think that's because they were shoving this whole ton of information into this one annual. But with no knowledge of any of this stuff, I felt like it was accessible. I gave it a B.
Cool. I'm glad it was accessible with you coming in cold. I thought you'd read some of the series before.
No. So I'm pretty game. Like when you say, hey, let's check this out, I'm like, yeah, I've never read that. Let's do this.
I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, I mean,
I have picked up on that.
Yeah, and the cool thing is like some people haven't been reading maybe this title, and so now they get to hear from a guy who's never read this title, and what did I think of it?
Yeah,
which is kind of cool.
It is cool, and I appreciate your willingness to go try stuff with an open mind. It definitely helps.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sounds good.
This is Powers of X number 1. I know some people are saying, oh, it's Powers of 10.
Yeah, that's what I keep hearing, Powers of 10.
That's definitely what I keep hearing. And you know what? Jonathan Hickman knows what an exponent is.
Yes, he does.
This, to me, answered the age-old question that nobody had really asked that I'm aware of. What would the X-Men look like if they were reimagined as the almost cliche image series?
Okay.
Because we get four time frames here, each equating to an exponent of X10, if you will. X0 being, you know, year one of the X-Men, the dawn of the X-Men.
Yep.
X to the first power of 10 years later, which is the present day of 10 years from the dawn of the X-Men. X to the second power of 100 years, and then X to the third power of 1,000 years.
Yep.
And when we're first getting this scene of the dawn of the X-Men or whatever, we've basically got Charles Xavier somewhere at like a street fair kind of a thing, meeting, I think it was Moira McTaggart, maybe.
Yeah, they never said who it was, and I didn't know who it was.
I'm assuming it's her, maybe it's somebody else. Honestly, I don't know. I couldn't figure out the point of that whole scene.
Me neither, because they're like, she basically kind of like jokes with them, you know who I am, or, you know, and you know if this is a dream or real, and then he looks at her like inquisitively, and I'm like, who is it? He's like, who are you? Why don't you use your powers? I don't know who you are. They don't tell us.
I assume this is before he's founded the X-Men. He's made the decision. I don't know. It's like, whatever.
Maybe she's from the future. Who knows?
Maybe. But I'm expecting all four timelines to get continued over the couple of issues.
Yes.
But for that one, it got off to a weak start because I don't know what the hell was going on.
Me too.
The present day stuff of the X-Men in year 10 or whatever, which I'm assuming is present day, it seems to match what we've seen over in House of X.
Because we have the Krakoa, like, everyone's living there in this place.
Exactly. We get a little bit of stuff here. We get Charles with the bizarre helmet Cerebro thing, maybe. I don't know. It's like, could you bother explaining a little of this stuff? I mean, I expect the storyteller to, I don't know, tell the story. I couldn't tell the point of this scene either, other than they'd gotten this thing. I guess it's a USB drive. I don't know, because that's what we saw over in House of X. And something's going to happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of teasing, and it's an info dump with a lot of teases, this whole book.
Well, yeah. The first two, where we actually have some context of what, at least of what had happened in the time frame to go with, it didn't hook me. Then, by the time we hit year 100 or whatever, I'm like, who are these characters and why should I care? Much less by the time we hit, you know, year 1000.
Yeah, in year 100, that's where it started to lose me a little bit, which year 100 is a big war that's going on. And then year 1000, basically where mutant kind is in the future, 900 years after this war. But it got very weird because it's not the characters that you see and that you know. There's some common characteristics with some of them. Maybe that's like offspring of characters we know today. But it got really confusing. And then they start jumping into those info dumps, is what I call them.
Yeah, the info dumps are very much Jonathan Hickmanisms.
Oh, yeah. And it almost reads like a source book for an RPG, like where they just give you all the stats and statistics. You have genetic markers and different things that they're creating, Mr. Sinister creating. And I'm just like, oh my God, he really thinks these things out, and he gives you a ton of material, but at the same time makes it very difficult and confusing. You have to dig and read through multiple times.
Yeah. By the time we hit these two future time frames, it's not like we were seeing anybody that we'd known from, like, the X-Men 2099 or any of that kind of stuff. Not that I expected to or think we needed to, but we're getting things that are referencing particular X-Men of, you know, Quentin Quire, Wolfsbane, I think, Kitty Pryde, a few of those things. But we're getting some of that in that info dump text graphic type stuff, which, you know, I actually went through and read this time. I don't always do that, but I knew with Hickman I was going to need to do that to have any shot of understanding the rest.
Exactly. And after reading that, and then I read it again, it made the story make a little bit more sense.
It did, but I think if you were to have read just the 90 years plus now or the 990 years from now, the X to the second or X to the third scenes, that to me is where it was very much a image comic in almost the cliche way.
Yes, it felt very, I didn't have a connection with any of those characters. When you got to year 100, year 1000, it lost me because I don't know who to care about. I don't know anything about these characters, and you just create them there. I imagine there'll be some type of an impact later on, you know, but it almost seems like with the books that are coming out that have already been solicited after Hickman's done these six books, you know, House of X and the Powers of 10 or X, that's going to be kind of a one-off, and it doesn't look like we're going to revisit this in the future type stuff.
I don't know. I'm almost wondering if one of those books is set in one of these other timelines.
It could be. Could be. I wish I kind of read them, but they're very vague. Like you said, yeah, so they could. Maybe it could be. Maybe one of them's that Adam and Eve type thing that was going on that we saw in the book. Who knows?
Well, there was one of the titles solicited where we've got, you know, this crew on a ship captained by Captain Pryde or whatever.
That's true. Yeah.
That one felt like an other timely kind of a deal.
That very much could have been it. Yeah. Now, this one, how did you feel this stood up compared to House of X?
Not as well, because I felt the jumping around in time meant that I had less story time in each period to kind of get my bearings and get a satisfying story chunk. And for two of the periods, the future ones, I didn't know the characters, the status quo. I didn't have any anchor point.
That's exactly the same way I felt. I felt like House of X, I was like, okay, this is cool. I'm reinvigorated with the X-Men. It's I like the direction we're going. All right. And I knew you didn't really like it, but I loved it. Okay, then we got to this, and I was like, okay, this is – parts of it are pretty cool. When you get to the 100,000, I'm lost. I don't really know what's going on. I kind of vaguely know, but I don't know any of the characters. I don't have any reference points. Yet, at the same time, the RPG elements, the Hickmanisms of those info dumps, I kept reading those, and I was like, this guy has put so much thought and effort into this. I'm like, I'm just kind of wowed that he did this. And will something come of it? We will see.
This one had me actively a little concerned about the future of the X-Men franchise for the short term.
Me too, a little bit. What had you concerned? Was it basically where the year 100 and what's going on in year 1000?
Well,
what happened?
The whole promise is this will change the way you look at every X-Men story before and after, that this is a seminal moment in history and stuff. And I'm like, you know what? This isn't bad, but I was kind of disconnected from the story.
Which is not a good thing.
No, I couldn't tell what was going on. I didn't have anything that made me think, I must come back and learn what this is happening or whatever. The closest I came to that was the one point, I think it was in the 90 years future, where we see a couple of familiar-looking characters or whatever, and there's the sense of, okay, you know, what's going on with them and what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. The year 100 was weird, and I didn't care for it as much. But when they go into year 1000, it got really weird because there you have nobody to anchor yourself to. And you almost see almost like a deity scene with the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
That was just really weird. I was like, what the heck is this?
This was one of those, I didn't dislike the issue, but I didn't particularly like it either. It was a little more than just there. I think it had some good moments. I think some of the art was good. Some of the ideas were interesting. But this strikes me too much of the big epic grand saga or whatever. And it's like, you know what? Just tell a really good story and build the epic saga that way. Don't tell me this is the turning point. Things will never be the same again. Don't overhype the story.
Yeah. I agree. I would say with this, you cannot read this book one time because you will be completely confused. The first time I read this, I was like, all right, this isn't making any sense. I mean, I got a lot of information, but I went back and read it the second time. It made more sense. And probably on a third read, I'd pick up more things. So it's very deep and it's very cryptic. And that's a pro and a con, because if you like books that the more you work at it, the more you get out of it, then you'll love it. If you don't like them and you like them very accessible, you're going to hate it.
I like books that are deep. I don't like books that are cryptic.
Yeah, and this is deep and cryptic, so it's very weird in that aspect that it's doing both. And I mean, even you get to the end of this this book, the very end, you know, he has messages on that, basically the last two white pages in there, which is written in a whole language. And I'm not going to go search and find out what this language is saying, but you know, House of X, they talked about this whole language they created, and they were showing them on the wall. And there's people online, I'm sure, trying to decipher what this means. I should probably just do a Google search, but he created his own language for this book. This guy's a brilliant genius, but also kind of nutty.
I question if it's a language or just another alphabet.
Yeah, an alphabet. Yeah, probably just an alphabet.
And when I got to those couple of pages where it's a couple of blocks of cryptic text or whatever, I'm like, I don't care that much what it says. And it could be that if I knew what it said, I'd be, oh, well, that's interesting. But you put a barrier between me and the story. What the hell?
Yeah, so he's been doing this stuff, and he makes you have to work. And I work to a point, but now when he does stuff like this, I'm like, okay, I don't want to work that hard where I'm going to have to go dig through the old issue of House of X and try and figure out pieces of the alphabet. I'm not doing that. Somebody's going to do it, and it's not going to be me.
Yeah. I remember when they used to do that kind of a thing in the old Legion of Superheroes comics back in the day with the Interlac stuff, and then usually in a letter column a few issues later, they'd have translated it for you or something. And it's like, that's a great Easter egg for those that want to take it and stuff, but if it's an actual key part of the story, then it's a downfall.
Yeah, and right now we have no clue what this is. I have no clue.
This struck me as they kind of seem to do what they must have set out to do. It just wasn't really in line with kind of what I was wanting and the direction I was hoping they'd go.
Yeah, exactly. I felt like House of X is the book that it got me excited. This one was the info dump with all of the Hickman nuances and the Hickman stuff that is a big turnoff to some people. So the first book, I think, was way more accessible, way more user or reader friendly. This one, way less reader friendly, way more information. You know, pick your poison.
What I find a little curious is this is the two series that are one. And they're not interleaved kind of consistently.
Yeah.
You know, we get issue one of House of X, then issue one of Power of X, then two of House of X, then two of Power of X, then three of Power of X, then three of House of X, four of House of X, four of Power of X. You know, it's like, you couldn't just do them like an every other week kind of a deal. I don't know.
And I'm sure there's some reason to it. There's some grand scheme that he's going to come out at the end, and this is the reason why, and we'll all look like fools.
Well, sure, maybe it's brilliant, but I don't want to have to work that hard to get the full power of the story and stuff for a comic. I'm also wondering why three of these lines are in red for the reading order.
Exactly, because I remember in the first book, and I don't have it here in front of me, but I remember some of the red stuff alluded to humans, and the black with the seeds alluded to mutants. So I don't know if the red stuff was going to be the stuff where the humans have impact on the story, but do you remember there's different seed colors?
I thought that was for the pharmaceuticals that have magically been developed out of nowhere.
Yes. And so I was wondering when I saw that, I said the red and black, then I saw these story things. I'm like, what the red, I think the red was for the humans. And so maybe those are going to be more human oriented stories or where the humans have impact on the X world. Who knows? That's the way I took it, but I don't know. I'm guessing.
If somebody comes back later and says this is what they mean, more power to them.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm curious, but not that curious.
Me too, but that means something because it's consistent. He had those same colors in the last one. And with Jonathan Hickman, he does weird stuff like this, and it means something. He does weird stuff in his books.
It's funny because when Greg Rucka puts that kind of level of thought and detail and stuff into his books, I really enjoy it. But I also don't feel he's being overly cryptic or like trying to show off or anything. And I'm not saying that Hickman's doing that, but I found some of these aspects of the graphic design, the text pages and stuff, more off-putting than pulling me into the story.
I could see that. And I do have that feeling because when I first read the info dumps, I was like, oh, this is cool. It's like a source book. It's like I felt like I was reading Greg Rucka and Lazarus, like those text pieces. I was like, oh, here's all the information, which I love that type of stuff. I get to the back matter in Lazarus, and I'm like a kid in a candy store. I love reading that stuff. Come here, and you have that. But I also think, and I hate to say this because I don't want to talk bad about anyone, but Hickman almost displays an arrogance with the way he writes.
That was kind of my take on it. And I hope I'm just being too harsh on him or whatever. I don't think he necessarily is arrogant, but there was enough of these things that kicked me out of the story versus pulling me in. I was hoping to come out of this saying, wow, this really is going to be a great new age of the X-Men.
Yeah.
I didn't do that. I came out of it more wondering, you know, didn't the X-Men used to actually be superheroes that were crime fighters?
Yeah. They did used to do that stuff. What happened to that?
Don't know.
I'm having a love hate because there's some parts of this book I really love, and then there's other things that are just absolutely frustrating to me, and that's where I am right now. And yet I respect him for the work he's put into it.
I'm hoping this all really pulls together in the six issues of this and the other series. It's a first issue. I'm going to give it a little bit of leeway because of that. It had some good moments, but I was hoping for, again, a stronger start. I'm going to go with a B- on this, and I'm curious what I'm going to think about the whole thing when it's all said and done.
Oh, okay. We're very close again. When we went to the House of X, and we didn't, you know, grade that or review it, I would have given that an A. I really liked it. Coming here, I liked it less so, but at the same time, it left me so curious, and it left me so inquisitive, and I'm just like, I need to know what's going to happen, and I'm having faith that he's going to bring it together. But for this issue, I went with a B just because I felt like it was a little bit inaccessible. Now, one last question before I move on. Mm-hmm. How many times did you read this?
The once.
Okay. Go back and read it a second time if you have time. I don't know. Because I picked up on a lot more things the second read. I was like, oh. And it made more sense because I read those text dumps. I was like, when I went back and read it the second time, I was like, it made more sense. I started seeing things. Oh, I see why they're calling this guy the priest. I see why this happened. You just start picking those things up.
Some of that I was able to kind of pick up as I was going and stuff, but I want a story I can read, not one that I've got to excavate and go unearth.
Yeah, which, yeah, you got to excavate with this one.
There's a time and a place for that, but yeah.
Understandable.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Sounds good. And this one will be fun.
Yeah, this is Ice Cream Man number 13. This is one that neither of us had ever read this title before.
Yeah, we're both taking a flyer on this.
We read the press PDF version of it. Let me set the scene first by saying I really don't even know what the premise of this book is. So I'm going to read the solicit because yeah. This is the sum total of what I knew going in.
Please do.
New story arc. All right. Okay. So far, so good. Palindromes. What if you could have it both ways? And that's about it. It was a very short, concise, almost Kirkman-esque solicit.
Yes.
And when I'm looking at this cover with the ice cream man, he's got an arrow, he's pointing at it, he's got kind of fang teeth, weird eyes. I'm like, what the hell have we gotten into?
That's what I was thinking.
Then I started reading the issue.
Okay.
And I hadn't really read the solicit of the whole palindromes thing at first, but when I hit that first page where we've got the title card, the credits, palindromes, did you catch all the palindromic sentences? And I'm like, well, I haven't read the story yet, so no, I haven't actually. And then I hit the second page of this comic as a palindrome. It could be read forwards from first to last panel or backwards from last to first panel. It's up to you. Yeah. And I'm like, okay.
Which way should I read it?
And then the next page was author's note. If you choose to enjoy the story backwards, read panels from top to from bottom to top and right to left. Like, good Lord, I need instructions for this comic?
Yeah.
So at this point, I'm already, you know, a little off. And again, I went in having no idea the premise of this series. The solicitation was way uninformative. Don't blame him for that. Well, I do blame him for that, but it kind of explains to me why few people jump onto a title in the middle of a run. It's like, you got nothing. If I had read that solicit and seen that cover, unless I was a huge fan of palindromes, nothing would really have pulled me in saying, I must get this series sight unseen.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? I think I had heard Drew talking about it either on the Slack channel or on his podcast. And him and his brother, they really liked the Ice Cream Man. They said it was a great story. And I read this. I was like, this is interesting. This is weird.
Yeah, this is one of those. I didn't do any research on the title, so I still don't know the premise of the title. And I've read a full issue of it.
After reading it, I still don't know what happened and why this happened, really.
This whole bit about the palindromic nature of the comic both had me a little curious. From a storytelling perspective, but also almost preemptively pushed me out of the story a little before I'd even read the story.
Yeah.
And that's not good.
Never a good thing.
Now, I will give them credit for, while I felt they may have tried a little too hard to be clever with the storytelling and stuff, they took 12 pages of story and got it into a 24-page comic by basically taking splash pages, mirroring them, and putting the you know, relettering them. But then for pages that were not splash pages, they reordered the panels in the other order. So it was very much literally the same art backwards and forwards, just rearranged on the page.
Yeah, exactly. And you get to that one page with the friends, and the homeless guy's introducing his friends. Mm-hmm. And literally all those friends, you can read the stuff backwards and forwards, and it says exactly the same thing. It got really trippy there.
Yeah, most of those phrases are palindromic sentences and stuff, and it's like, okay, I get it. The only page that I felt was not kind of a mirror image, ironically, was the center double page splash.
Yep.
Where we've got the guy being mirrored, but the faces and all that stuff on the wall or whatever, I guess it is.
They're different.
They're different on the two sides.
Yeah, that's true. As soon as you said that to the center, I went and I looked at him. I'm like, oh, yeah, the faces are different.
Everything else, though, the page on the two sides of that is the same. The same art, but the panels are rearranged to flip the reading order.
Exactly. So it was really this was totally trippy. And I almost felt like these people were using some mind-altering substances when they created this book. Did you feel like that?
I couldn't tell if it was that or just trying to show how clever they were.
Yeah, they were really trying to show how we're very smart, we can come up with this thing, but I still have no clue what this story was about, having read it. I was just like, other than being clever, I mean, it's a story of loss, but...
I think part of what worked against it for me is because they had those couple of pages of setup, I went in reading it both a little forwards and backwards. Like when I hit that second page of move forward, Paul, well, that's one way to go. I knew it was able to be read, well, that's one way to go, move forward, Paul.
Yeah.
You know, and we started to get into the more involved pages and stuff. I'm already trying to dual path the story, which means I'm spending more time thinking about the story than experiencing the story.
Exactly. So if he wouldn't have said that and you would have gone through it and then maybe said, it's all a palindrome at the end, you could have read it either way. It would have been more clever, you know?
Yeah. At that point. But it's funny because, I mean, the front and I guess the back cover are the same thing with the art image reversed. The credits are the same page both times. The comic is a palindrome page is the same both times. The hey, you read it backwards this way kind of a deal is, I think, the same both times. So there's a couple of pages just off the bat they didn't even have to do any flipping around on. But as to what the hell the story was, I have no earthly idea, and it doesn't strike me as the kind of story that I am interested enough in to go through the excavation needed to go figure it out.
That's exactly where I was, because although I respected the writer and the artist for creating a palindrome comic and doing this cool thing, hey, look how clever we are, we're smarter than you. I mean, and that's, you know, once again, arrogance from a writer, which, well, fine, whatever, do your thing. I read the story and I'm like, but the story made no sense at all. And I don't know if it was meant to make sense. It was a story, but I don't know why that happened. I don't know if it meant anything. That was just weird. And it made me never want to read this title again.
I would pretty much agree with that. I came in knowing nothing about Ice Cream Man. I came out knowing nothing about Ice Cream Man. I felt the story got to the midpoint and then literally did a U-turn and covered back the same ground. And again, the flipping of the art, the rearranging the panels, I did think that was kind of a clever thing. The story did not work at all for me, but I really doubt I'm kind of part of the target audience.
Yeah, I don't know who the target audience is, but somebody.
I don't know, but I'm the type of guy who likes the superheroes. I like the sci-fi. I like that kind of action adventure, you know, stuff. This was none of that.
No, this was more trippy, weird, and even though the guy looked kind of scary on the cover, I guess you could say, it wasn't a horror story at all. It didn't feel like it. It just felt weird.
Well, he didn't seem to be in the story unless he was the same guy that we follow for this. I don't know.
And I don't know why it's called Ice Cream Man. I have no clue.
Any comic that can be accurately described as trippy, and I think it fits for this one, generally not going to be one where I think, wow, man, I love that.
It's true. And what's funny is we literally looked at all the comics coming out, and it was the fifth week, and there wasn't much. And so with the indie comic, we were both like, we don't see much good. And I remember early on, it was like by issue one, they said, oh, that was so cool. I think it was Drew. And I was like, let's check it out. We could get press PDFs. Let's check this thing out. It said it's kind of like a new arc. And I read it, and I was just like, man, I hope we picked the wrong issue, because if they were all like this, I'm like, oh my gosh. I feel so much better about my decision not to buy this book.
Well, it's one of those things, when they say it's an arc, I expect an arc, not a half-issue story that reverses.
Yeah, exactly. This was just, it's trippy and weird. That's the only way you can describe it. And I know the writer's clever. I know they're very relatively intelligent people, yet at the same time, I think they've used some mind-altering substances, and they're just enjoying themselves.
And that could be. And I could see how somebody like Drew would really enjoy this. He likes the stuff that's different from the mainstream, that's not just another superhero title and stuff like that. And that's great. There is an audience that will love this. It's got nice, clean artwork. It's just, again, trippier and a little more twisted and dark and stuff than I tend to care for.
Yeah. I like trippy and dark stuff as long as it has a story to it, something that happens. This, I just felt like, I felt like nothing happened.
This strikes me as the sales pitch is, wow, isn't this cool?
It pretty much, yeah. Look at this. Haha.
It's more style than substance for me. Other people may actually have context and get a good story out of this. but yeah, it wasn't me.
Me neither. We're together with this one, and like I said, I had never read Ice Cream Man. Neither one of us had, and going forward, I will never read Ice Cream Man again. I'm sorry to the authors, but you did me in. I'm not the target audience.
Yeah, we gave it a chance. I am highly unlikely to ever read another issue of this. Not out of, you know, hatred or anything, but just it's not for me.
Yeah, not for me. Not for me at all.
That having been said, I am going to give this a C+ for the grade because while I didn't get anything out of the story, I did feel the story technique over blown as it was kind of a deal. They put some effort in this. It was at least a little bit clever for flipping the art, rearranging the panels and stuff. I give them a little bit of credit for effort there. If they could have actually done it, where, man, there was a story that I could read both ways and maybe get different experiences out of.
Yeah.
But it was half a story that there wasn't a second read to be had.
Yep.
If I'd read it one way and said, oh, okay, but then I read it another way and it's like, there's that old country song that's basically a spoof of country songs of what if you play them all backwards?
Yeah.
your dog comes back to life, you get your job, you get the riches.
Your wife comes back.
Yeah, the whole, everything works out, you know? If it was that kind of a story where you read it one way, man, it's depressing, read it the other way, wow, it's uplifting.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been really cool.
But it wasn't that.
No. And with me, I feel like the bad guy now. You gave it a C+. I left this. I did respect the stuff that they did. I thought that was really cool. The clean artwork was cool. But overall, when a book turns me off to this level to where I'm just like, I'll never read this again, I went with a D+. I'm just like, not for me. Not enjoyable. And I know there's somebody out there that's going to enjoy it. I just can't see who that person is because it came off as very arrogant to me.
To me, it's somebody who likes the more experimental storytelling, who likes the different, the out there, that gravitates towards the vertigo, the image, those more different sensibilities.
They'll probably like this, yeah.
And I know that is so much not me that I'm not kind of knocking it down for not hitting me, who I feel is so clearly not just out of the target demographic, but almost, you know, the inverse of the target demographic.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, I mean, I totally don't think your rating is either unduly harsh or wrong or anything of the sort. This is one of those books that this issue, at least, I have no idea about the rest of the run, that if you have not read it and you've wondered, well, what's it all about, I'm not the right person to tell you to go get it, that's for sure.
Yeah, and if somebody's enjoying it, let us know on the Slack or the forum somewhere. And maybe someone out there, tell us what you like about it. I just don't know. Maybe this was an off issue, but maybe I'm sure there's going to be somebody who loves this issue.
Oh, absolutely. Just respect the fact that not everybody does love this issue. And because you have differing opinions doesn't mean any one of you is either lesser or more of a person or comic fan or whatever.
Very true.
I've had other discussions in the past with people where it's, oh, you don't get it. Well, you just don't know a good story or whatever. It's, yeah, you can feel that way, but you know, move on.
More different taste.
Yeah. I think it's cool this kind of thing is out there. I am curious if it is as experimental storytelling-wise every issue or not.
Yeah, that's what I don't know. Because at the beginning, I remember I even heard some podcasts talking about a review of Ice Cream Man number one, and they made it sound almost like a horror book at some point, and yet it wasn't a horror book. And they were talking about it, they're like, oh, it's so cool and this and that. And so when I got here, I was like, it looked kind of horror-ish, but I was like, I just go into it, I'm like, I felt like there was no story there. There was nothing there. It was just more like a cool play on palindromes. And I literally, truth in advertising, what he said in the solicit, that's what it was.
Yeah, but if I want to have it both ways, I want one of those ways to have meaningful story.
Yeah, me too. A palindrome with a meaningful story, something that meant something.
Yeah.
Or went somewhere. So all that being said, I finally got my preview stuff. What was weird, I get so many Omnibuy now that Eric, he ships out my comics, and I usually get them like Thursdays, and then my Omnibuy comes shortly after, two or three in a box with my previews, and those came on Monday. But DC had a very thick preview.
I haven't actually opened it up yet. I got it. What I noticed from the solicits online and stuff is they seem to be doing 1 month in advance. I'm assuming it's because of a cover gimmick or something.
So does that mean we're going to have a really hefty bill this month and then nothing or a very small bill next month?
I think it may mean we have a thin previews next month, but having sketched out my order so far, it doesn't look unduly huge.
Okay.
But I've also been cutting back on various Marvel and DC titles, so.
Yeah. DC had a lot of number ones, a lot of one-shots, believe it or not, more like what Marvel's been doing. They're doing a lot of what Marvel's doing. They're doing the facsimile editions now. They're doing the $1 issues. So I think their title count's going to be going up.
Theirs might. I don't think mine will.
Yeah, mine will. I don't think mine will. That's awesome.
And it's cool. I just, some of the stuff they're doing is not really clicking with me as much. And I don't think that it's like I've suddenly become any more jaded of a reader than I have been the last couple of years. But some of the stuff I'm just expecting better out of than they seem to be providing. That disappoints me.
Well, I'm kind of weird in that it seems like it's changing for me. And for some reason, I've just kept buying and buying and buying and buying because I'm like, oh, it's going to turn around and I'll be there for the turn. But the ones that I'm really, Flash did turn around for me. It got better. I think with this year one, it finally got pretty good for me. Wonder Woman just fell off a cliff for me. Nightwing fell off a cliff for me when they went to the team of Nightwings. I just didn't like that. So a few of them have really kind of just blah. I'm not enjoying. And then over at Marvel, it's just so much stuff that I'm almost just getting like with that Absolute Carnage. I was like, okay, I'll read the main story, but I'm not getting all your little side books, you know, the three issues here and three issues there. It's just too much.
I'm not even going to get Absolute Carnage.
I don't blame you. I didn't think you were a Carnage fan.
You know, it's funny because I've got most of his appearances.
Oh, really?
But, well, yeah, I was pretty much all in at Marvel for a few decades.
Oh, okay, cool.
So, I mean, part of it for me is the direction they're going with a lot of these characters. I don't know, there's a part of it where the whole superhero crime fighter aspect, silly though it may be, is a storytelling thing I enjoy. Yet they're going away from that, by and large, in so many cases.
No, that makes sense. Like, if I took, you know, my all-time favorite comic, which is Conan. And Conan, who he is, you know, he goes around, he lops people's heads off. He's a barbarian, and he, you know, lays around with winches, and that's just who he is. If they turn him into a PC character who's, you know, a peaceable person, it wouldn't talk to me because that's what I would go to Conan for. I want to read about this barbarian who's, you know, fighting people with swords and saving the wench. That's what he does. So if they go away from that, they're going to lose me. And I can see if you are drawn to those crime stories and the good fighting evil, and they go away from that and they're making the good characters bad or forgetful or not who they are, that's going to drive you away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's the same thing. It's just pick where, you know, which character you like, and are they butchering it or are they making it better? And actually, another one at Marvel that I'm getting ready to drop is Iron Man.
I can understand that. I'm on the fence on that one. If they would do a little bit more with the whole, you know, sentient rights stuff or something, it just feels like they're almost playing for time on that title. And I know what's going to happen next year is we're finally going to get Arno back and have Iron Man 2020, which has been literally decades in the making in some way, shapes, and forms.
Yeah.
It's just what they're doing is okay. I don't think it's brilliant. I think they've had much better runs recently.
I agree. And like Slott, he's doing a really good job with Fantastic Four, but you go to Iron Man, I'm like, I'm just not feeling it.
Well, I mean, the other thing, and I may have mentioned this on one of the other podcasts, episodes or whatever, I don't remember, but if I had the time and the interest and stuff, it'd be fun to do an analysis of actual crimes that happen in comics.
Yeah.
And both in the comic and that happened previous to that issue kind of a deal. Either, you know, hey, it's credited to another issue, or it's just Batman's investigating a crime that happened 6 months ago kind of a deal. But I honestly think crime is down in most comic book cities.
It really is. They don't talk about crime that much. I mean, we reviewed that thing with the rollerblading guys stealing a sword with Valkyrie. But you don't get a lot of crime. It's more superhero versus superhero, or, you know, demons invading the planet, or War of the Realms type stuff. You don't get the just street level crime fighting.
It gets to where it's almost more revenge stuff than an actual crime.
Very true.
You know, most times when you see a Batman villain or a Spider-Man villain, they're going after Batman or Spider-Man because, well, Spider-Man went after them for, 20 years ago doing a crime or something.
Exactly. You know?
It's, and if that's how they want to play it, that's fine. But again, that's not what originally got me into comics, and it's not what's keeping me in comics.
Yeah, and they still do have some comics like that. It's just, it seems like Marvel and DC are kind of moving away from that. So that's why you're not feeling it with the big two. And that's where your heart's been, because you've collected them since the 70s or whenever you started.
Yeah, for many a decade.
Now, question on the DC stuff. Those acetate covers, are those the only covers? Or if you don't order now, will they have regular covers in the next previews? Do you know? Did you hear?
I haven't even looked enough at it enough to know that.
Yeah, me neither. So I was figuring I was going to add them on, but I didn't know if this is like a special thing where we're overpaying and then they're going to have the normal issues in the next previews, which I'll just save, you know, wait and get the normal issues if that's the case.
We should find that out from Eric, our friendly retailer at Cowabunga. And if I can wait a month and get them cheaper, I'll do that.
Yeah, because they're like $4.99, and I'm wondering if like the regular cover A, $3.99s will be in next month's preview. And if that's the case, yeah, I'll get those, because I think acetate just means it's plastic or something. I don't know what that is.
It's like a plastic overlay or whatever kind of a deal. If I can get the comic for a buck cheaper, I will.
Yeah, I don't need plastic on my cover.
It could be a cool effect, like the 3D stuff or holograms, other stuff they've done before. I just don't want to pay the premium for it.
Yeah. Depending on the art, who's on there, the artist, if they put art germ on there, I'll get the acetate.
But if they're going to do that, I would hope they would solicit both at the same time. But it would explain how they could still have the previews next month with all this stuff being solicited this time.
That would. So that's what I'm guessing. So I'm definitely going to, maybe I'll email Eric and I'll just put it in the general form. I'll just send him a message in there so he can tell everyone what's going on.
Yeah, and let me know, and I'll include that in the upcoming preview spotlight that I'm recording in a couple of days.
All right, cool. And I'm recording my clips on Friday, just FYI, even though I know this is coming out after we should have already submitted the stuff.
I've already gotten a couple of clips. I think I've already got, I know I've got about 20 minutes worth of clips, but I think beyond Mike Myers, I have some other clips too.
Ah, so Mike, did he send you 20 minutes worth of clips?
20 minutes worth of clip singular.
That's awesome. I sent him a message. I was like, do a 30-minute clip, because he's like, I talk too long, but he's hilarious when he does it, because he just goes really in-depth.
Yeah, I trimmed a little of the dead space or whatever out, so maybe it's down to about 18 minutes or something, but still. It's kind of funny when I saw that. It's just, good Lord, how long is this? but yeah.
Looking forward to hearing that one.
Yeah, should be good. So yeah, hopefully people have sent in clips by the time this goes up, because I will have edited the entire episode by then. I've already recorded the June numbers for the comics and the trades. After the preview spotlight, I'm going to get the comics one up, and then the following week the trades go up. So it's a little further kind of behind schedule than normal, because I was at Comic-Con, and then I had 4 episodes worth of Comic-Con material to put out.
So been busy.
been busy. But it's a good kind of busy, I guess.
Definitely.
The next previews is going to come out, I believe, on August 28th. That means the following preview spotlight deadline will be September 7th, that bright and early, that Saturday morning. Regular format, one clip per pick and stuff. Pretty easy. Hopefully we'll have a good turnout on that one, too.
Hopefully. And I put a message on the Slack channel, so anyone on there will see. I'm like, please send me your clips by the Saturday, but early morning Saturday, hopefully. I didn't say that, but they know the drill by now, I hope.
I hope so. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool.
Join us next week as we discuss Green Lantern number 10 from DC, Future Foundation number 1 from Marvel, and Ignited number 3 from Humanoids.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.